Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome to the Detours Travel Show here on Joy 94.9. The time is about 6 minutes past 12. I'm Jodie, joined by Greg and Lindsay. How are you guys?
Fabulous. How are you, Jodie? You've returned from a fabulous trip.
I sure have.
Yeah, you're under the grill today, I believe, on your latest trip to India, you lucky thing.
I believe for where I'm sitting in the studio, it's called the hot seat.
Yes.
It is the hot seat, Jodie, and it's a pleasure to actually get you the other side of the interview panel this time.
I don't know how I feel about this. We didn't actually discuss beforehand any no-go areas, so I'm just going to have to go with the flow here. But that'll be fine.
No, you'll be fine. We'll be kind with you, absolutely kind with you. And I must say, listener too, a listener out there, that Jodie looks fabulous and rested after the trip. And she did tell me outside she did have a little bit of India belly for a while, but she looks so rested. So I think India is actually the place to go, Jodie.
Well, you know, the thing is, often people set you up with expectations that you'll freak out with culture shock, or, you know, you'll get overwhelmed, or you won't cope. Because, you know, I'm a bit of a control freak. People who know me well know I like organisation and orderliness. But it's an amazing place. India, this was my second trip that I did in April. The first trip I did was in October 2009. And I think it's a sort of place that you just have to open up your eyes, just immerse yourself and just go with the flow. And it was fantastic.
Can I ask what the inspiration is? Because, you know, as everybody would know, that my idea of a holiday is sitting on a nice beach, reading a nice book and, you know, doing activities and things like that and staying away from hustle and bustle. So what is the attraction to India?
Well, I think for me, the great thing about India is that you can partake in hustle and bustle in the major metropolitan cities, but there are equally many, many spots that have very sparse or low population. I also spent some time on the beach in Kerala in the south, okay. Which is a communist state, and it's also a matriarchal state. But beautiful, luscious, you know, green trees and wonderful beaches. So there's something for everyone there. And so I had to say I really limited the time I spent in the hustle and bustle, and I spent more of the time out and about in smaller places.
Now, that sounds like there's a degree of planning that's gone into that, Jodie. And did you plan for this trip? And how did you package where you went? And how did you work out where you were going to go the second time to India?
Well, in the past, and my partner at the time used to organise all of our holidays, and she did a fabulous job. And then we separated, and, you know, apart from the adjustments of not being together, I also then struggled to think, oh gosh, how am I going to organise my holidays? And in the past couple of years, I've spent time going on trips to visit friends. So really, it's just a flight, and I'll meet one of my friends when I arrive in the Middle East or somewhere. But this time I thought, I actually wanted to meet some people and I wanted to have a different type of experience. Originally, I'd planned to go to Japan for 2 weeks, but sadly, because of the earthquake and the tsunami, that trip was cancelled. So I then hinged my whole trip around visiting Jeffrey Conaghan and his partner Matthew, who long-term listeners of Detours will know that Jeffrey was a regular guest talking about aviation and airports. And he is living in Bangalore, which is in the northeast, or the central area. And he said, why don't we catch up in Amritsar, which is in the far northwest of India, near the Pakistan border, in a region called Punjab.
Oh, okay.
And let's do that over Easter. I thought, well, why not? You know, some people go camping. I'll go and meet him in Amritsar. So that was the beginning of the plan. And then everything else hinged around it.
So it was a toss-up between a caravan at Dramana and a trip to India. You chose the trip to India. So it's obvious that you travelled alone too, Jodie.
I did. And originally, my trip to Japan was a small group tour with Intrepid, and they were really helpful trying to reorganise a trip for me in the south of India. Now, you know what it's like when you're getting ready to go and you're hectic and, you know, trying to get things organised. Well, they sent through the confirmation of the email, and they'd actually put me on a competitor's tour company because they didn't have any tours available that met my needs at the time. And on the itinerary, I just looked at all of the places I'd be going in Kerala, which is in the southwest of India. I thought, oh, that's good. Looks fabulous. Okay, I'm happy with that. It's all locked in, and off I went. I'd also booked another trip with Intrepid in the northeast, the Rajasthan area, starting in Delhi. So I thought, it's all sorted. It's fine. And when I arrived at the airport in Cochin, in the south in India, a gentleman had a placard with my name, met and greeted me, welcomed me, took me out to the vehicle, introduced me to the driver. And as we were on our way to the hotel, he said, now, in the morning, the driver will come and meet you at 9:30. And then the tour guide will be there as well. But the way he said you made me feel like it was very singular. Yeah. I thought I was on a group tour. And he said, no, ma'am. Oh, no, it's just you and a driver. So I looked at the itinerary. Of course, it was in big, bold letters that described it. So the first part of the tour for the first week was a tour for me.
Fabulous. So that sort of worked in your favour. So I think that is just superb because there's one thing that I loathe about travel is walking around with a group of people going, oh, you know, Doris, isn't that fabulous? I just think that is so special, Jody, that you had your own driver, you were able to see what you wanted to see, you could stop and look at things whenever you wanted.
Absolutely. And the thing as well, I guess, to start off with, you need to just go at your own pace, and I was able to do that. And then there were local guides along the way who had deep, in-depth knowledge about the attractions and the historical things worth visiting.
Now, when you go at your own pace, it's a new culture. The transport's not what you're used to. The food's different. The whole environment's different. Do you operate off a map? How do you connect with what's happening around you?
Normally, if I travel, I do take a map, or that's one of the first things I ask for at the hotel. But this time I decided, well, you know, it's all arranged and I can just let go of some of that control or quest to, you know, have it all sorted and just go with it. So I just relied on the guides and their local knowledge and just got my own bearings, went for walks and sorted out some landmarks.
Beautiful. So how long were you actually there? Because, you know, I followed your journey on Facebook. And, oh, my God, now she's washing elephants and the next day you're at some temple like eating rose petals or something. How long are you actually away? Because it seems like you're away for like 4 weeks at least.
It was 4 weeks.
It was?
Yes.
At any time, like, Jody, travelling alone, especially in a place like India where there is that hustle and bustle and it is a totally different culture to us, was there any time that you thought, you know, I feel a little bit tentative about doing something or a little bit scared?
Only once. And I guess the thing is, I always felt very safe. People were very, very welcoming, helpful. English is widely spoken, so there was no, you know, communication issues on the most part. I had, you know, the list of the important phrases, which were food.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
There was only one time in the whole trip I felt very tentative, and that was when I was in Kerala. Now, Kerala is geared for tourism. It is known as God's own country. It's one of the major sources of income. They do it really, really well. Fabulous service. A lot of people were really keen to know, you know, to get feedback on how the trip was. Very multicultural as well because it's on the spice route. So, you know, in the 14th century, the Portuguese were settling there and, you know, you've got rich history and mix of different cultures. But in Kerala, there was a place I visited called Alappi. Now, this is called the backwater area, which is about 900 kilometres of canals. And that trip was going on a houseboat, which that area is renowned for. So small houseboats would have got ecological modifications so that they don't damage the environment. And normally when you get on a boat in most places, you've got a jetty and you get on the boat. But this was sort of all of the boats were lined up next to each other. So you had to get in one boat and then into the next one and to the end. And we got to the end and I had my small backpack and my driver was on the land and a gentleman was doing the meeting and greeting and someone was giving me some jasmine flowers to put around my neck and someone else was putting a little red dot on my head as a welcome and giving me some mango juice. And I suddenly realised that I would be on my own. I would be on my own on this boat with these two guys overnight.
Oh.
What am I doing? what am I doing? So I said to the owner of the company, and I said, it is safe, isn't it? And he said, oh, yes, ma'am. Very safe, very safe. Good driver, good driver. No, 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 I'm not worried about the driving. Am I safe? Am I okay? And that was the only time. But then I sort of rationalised it and realised it's run by a professional company.
Mm.
I could see and hear people all on around me on the deck area and also on the banks of the river, and I just had to have faith that it'd be fine.
So what's the level of communication between the two guys on the boat running the tour for you, the sole occupant on that boat? What's the communication between you and these two men running that tour, and how do you develop that bond for the time you're together on that boat?
Well, initially I wasn't very receptive to developing a bond because I was thinking, oh, what have I done? Oh my God, I'm in the middle of nowhere. But then when I relaxed and realised that, you know, this is a great opportunity and I'll enjoy it, they were really fantastic. They were very, very friendly, very professional. The older guy was the captain. And they made an amazing effort to point out wildlife and cultural attractions along the way and point out the way that people lived. And it was sort of like being on a moving movie screen. I mean, you looked outside and saw into people's lives and the way people live and, you know, women washing their saris on the side of the river and kids playing and, you know, fishing for things and big long boats with sand or gravel being transported. And, you know, even just looking into the way that people lived, which is a universal picture in my mind of a really small baby in a big bucket being washed at bedtime. Mm. So the people on the boat in Alapi were amazing to help me appreciate and see that, and it was beautifully quiet, and there were lots of other tourists around, but it was just gorgeous.
We've really, in Western worlds, disconnected with the oceans. It's very few people have villages by the sea, and they fish and they interact with river or sea in a day-to-day environment. At some point, you're connecting back with perhaps where we all came from, with people interacting. Did you get a sense of that?
I did, and what I loved about it as well was that you could hear and see temples and mainly Hindu temples in that area, but a few Christian churches as well because of the Portuguese origin in the area, and people going about their daily business but also their daily worship. And that for me was quite amazing because you could hear it all around you, as well as the bird life, beautiful bird life, kingfishers, and just spectacular.
So is religion a very important part of their culture?
Absolutely. Everywhere you go.
And everyone's interacting. Doesn't matter the age of the people, the whole population interacts with their faith.
I think it's true to say that they're like in all cultures and all faiths, there's people who have different levels of the spectrum of their, whether they're devout or not. And that's the case in India. There's obviously people who do go to worship or do go to temple or participate in festivals. And whether they're really into it or not, who knows? Only individuals could know that.
Now, you're here on Detours, and that voice is Jodie Wilmer, this time on the other side of the interview seat here, as she unpacks her beautiful travels through India with Lindsay.
I'm Lindsay.
And Greg, here on Detours. Here on Joy 94.9 on Detours with Lindsay and Greg, and today our guest is Jodie Wilmer, normally a host of this show, but she's here today. And that song was O River by Zoe and Iris Rahman. Jodie, we're unpacking your amazing journeys through India, and what are the sights and what things did you see when you went to Kerala? What things come to mind now when you're looking back after only a couple of weeks?
Oh, well, Kerala is a beautiful place, without a doubt. One of the things that we always love to explore, of course, on the Detours Travel Show is food. And the food was just gorgeous. A lot of coconut, a lot of pineapple in both sweet and savoury. A lot of fish. And I tried some of that when I was out on the houseboat as well. And everywhere I went, the food was just spectacular.
What sort of fish do you eat?
It was a white fish. I don't know exactly what type of fish it was, but it was yummy.
Like not your traditional whiting or piece of flake.
No.
Did they catch it and serve it to you?
It wasn't caught by the guys on the houseboat, but it was purchased locally. Yeah, it was very, very fresh, and a lot of seafood. But, you know, like a lot of places around the world, overfishing is a problem. So and the other thing that is quite incredible about Kerala is the hill stations or the mountains, which are where tea plantations and coffee plantations and spice plantations are located. And I'd never seen any of those in my life before. So it was wonderful going up into the hill station areas and observing that and you know, going on a guided walk to look at cinnamon and look at cardamom and see how it's all grown. And it's really fascinating. But I realised that I couldn't ever be in the spice trade because, you know, those spices take a long time to grow. I mean, it can take
really?
Like 15 years for something to go from a seed to being a plant that you can harvest. I mean, gosh. And no wonder it was so expensive and still now.
You can't delay gratification without Jody, can you?
No.
And one of the other great things in Kerala was I did stay at a resort in Kovalam Beach, which is to the south. Trivandrum is the capital city. There is another name, but I can't pronounce it. And I was fortunate to meet a family of people from the UK, a husband and wife and their adult daughter, the Day family, and they sort of adopted me, which was just gorgeous. Staying in a resort, we got along really well. We spent a lot of time having meals together, but we'd go and do our own thing. And then one day we headed out to an elephant conservation reserve, and this is where we had the opportunity to wash elephants. Now, the mahouts or the carers or the keepers of the elephants every morning spend at least 2 hours washing elephants, even elephants that are used in parades and things, and this is part of their care. And they invited us into the water whilst the elephant was on its side to help out. So we rolled up our trousers and got into the water. And obviously the elephant was just, you know, really, really enjoying it. And what they do is instead of having, you know, a loaf or a sponge, they actually gave us a big piece of coconut husk. So on the outside, if you think of the shiny part, you hold on to that. And on the inside with the fibrous part was what you can use to actually sort of soap them up, so to speak.
So you scrubbed an
elephant. Beautiful.
We did.
Absolutely. And honestly, Jo, because that to me is probably, like, so far, and for me, if I was on that trip, that would be the absolute highlight of that trip because, you know, like, you're in this spiritual place, India, and you have that opportunity. But I have to ask, again, like, cleaning a great big, like, 4-ton elephant and little Jodie, because she's not a big girl, were you ever sort of a little bit frightened? Like, where's that trunk going? And do I really want it there?
No. The mahouts, who were the carers, were obviously had a very good relationship with them for a long time, and they were treated really well, the elephants, and so I didn't feel that there was any, you know, problem of them, you know, lashing out or something. I did actually ride the elephant with Claire, a young woman from the UK. Now, that was petrifying. I really, really didn't enjoy that. You know, it's the height thing and you're holding on to a piece of rope with this canvas and, you know, of course the elephant wants to go and, you know, get branches and things and I felt very vulnerable and got off it and another visitor said, "Oh, what did you think?" I said, "Oh, it's the worst thing I've ever done in my life." But if you want to do it, do it.
See, the elephant will never forget that, Jody.
When you're in the water with the elephant, do you get a sense you're engaging with it? It knows you're there. Do you get to look in its eyes?
Yes. Yeah. And I wondered whether it was sort of like monkeys. I mean, the sort of I've been warned about monkeys that you shouldn't look in their eye because that sort of antagonises them and threatens them. But with elephants, they were very placid and beautiful creatures. And we got to feed them as well. And in fact, the driver along the way to the reserve said, "We need to buy some bananas." And I thought he was hungry, but he actually meant for the elephant. And you don't peel them. For the elephants, you just put it whole in their mouth with their big sloppy tongue and in it goes. So it was amazing.
That's fantastic.
I'm envious of that, actually. That's just got me shivering, that whole experience. So from, what was it, Kesala? Have I got that right?
Kerala.
Yes. Where did you go from there?
After about 2 weeks in the south, I flew north, and India has fantastic budget airlines. Mm. You know, there's a lot of competition, And so I flew up north to Amritsar, which is in Punjab, which is in the far northwest on the Pakistan border. And that's where I met up with Jeffrey and his partner Matthew, who flew from Bangalore, and started another chapter of the trip, which was, you know, really delightful as well. Now, Amritsar is the place of the Sikhs' holy temple, which is called the Golden Temple. And it's a very spiritual place. But it's also chaotic and crazy, and lots of mules carrying, you know, big loads on little wagons, and, you know, all sorts of modes of transport, people riding rickshaws with little bikes. But we spent a couple of days there exploring, which was great.
Because Punjab is one of those places that fascinates me, and the culture and the spiritualism of the place. You know, I remember some time back I was talking to a cab driver who was from Punjab, and you know, he had the turban, and it was the most magnificent purple I've ever seen in my life. And I said, oh, so is this a phase in your religion, you're going through or something like that? He said, no, I just like the colour. And you try and sort of get information, because it is one of those places that, and I was actually watching something on TV, I think it was SBS, about Sikhs and their love of food, and the whole, like, if you're sharing food, it's a very, very spiritual thing to do. Did you do all that?
Well, I think in the context of going to the Golden Temple, which is a beautiful, you know, building made of marble and a large lake with a temple, a gold, literally plated with gold in the middle. And what was so phenomenal about that is the service that Sikhs perform as volunteers to maintain and welcome people, maintain the temple and welcome people. And they also have community kitchens, which everybody participates in the preparation. So we got the opportunity to have a look. And our driver there is a Sikh in Amritsar, who kindly joined us and showed us behind the scenes. And so we went into one part of the community kitchen, and there were people sitting on hessian mats, you know, peeling onions and garlic, and men and women all together. And they had this most amazing chapati machine. Now, chapatis are a wheat pancake that's cooked, and you have it with savoury food. But this was a high-tech one. It wasn't just, you know, a few rolling here and then, you know, put it on the hot plate. This was like a, you know, conveyor belt, and so that they could feed up to 20,000 people a day. So the food there, we didn't eat at the Golden Temple, but I could see that, you know, it was very clean, and people were obviously there because they felt that was an important way to honour their religion.
And you've got family units, you've got, you know, people of different generations all sharing meals together with their neighbours, with other people.
That's right. And for many people, many Sikhs, it is a pilgrimage that they want to take each, you know, in their lifetime to Amritsar.
Absolutely beautiful, because I was, when I saw that, you know, and talking to cab drivers as we do in Indian people, and you get this overview, and I thought, and then when I saw this little place, I just thought, yeah, that's somewhere I want to go. Now, from Punjab, you've met up with your friends. That must have been very, very exciting.
It was.
Did you actually stay with them, or?
Well, we stayed in one hotel, so they had a room and I had a room, and so we spent a couple of days just hanging out together, and I was really lucky as well. A friend of mine here in Melbourne, who's from Amritsar, got on the phone and Facebook to his cousin, Mohit, and said, hey, I've got some friends from Australia who are coming. Can you look after them? So literally, you know, a day after we arrived, we had a call from Mohit saying, I've been told I have to come and show you around.
Oh, beautiful.
Now,
beautiful.
Coming up shortly, we're going to unpack some of those experiences with Mohit as Jody's in India. You're on Detours with Jody, Lindsay and Greg. Detours. We're broadcasting live from India.
That's Ravi Shankar in the background.
We're somewhere up in the Punjab. And with Jody Wilmer, who's just returned from this place. Where are we, Jody?
Well, we were just reflecting on being in the Punjab in the far northwest. And one of the things that Jeffrey, Matthew and I did was with the driver guide we had, we went to the Pakistan border. the Wagyu border, it's called. So this is where there are major ceremonies on the Indian side and the Pakistan side of the closing of the gates at 4 p.m.
Every
day. So I'd seen this on Discovery Channels and also read about it in lots of travel mags, but we went there to see it. Now, one thing that we thought about upon arrival is that, you know, Australia and Melbourne in particular does events really well. Now, this is obviously a daily event, and it was chaos. There was no sort of system about where you park, and we suddenly were in a big, you know, flood of people walking towards the direction of the border, and then there were guards saying, you know, men separate to women to go through security. Now, what was interesting was the rules changed along the way. First of all, we were told we weren't allowed to bring water, so you had to dump these big bottles of water, but 200 metres behind us were people selling water, so they're obviously, you know, a good way to make some quick bucks or rupee. And then we went through security, and which is a normal thing in India, particularly after the bombings in Mumbai many years ago. But the rules kept changing again. You know, then they wanted ID. Well, of course, we didn't have any ID with us because we left that in the hotel safe. We weren't allowed, you know, and so we sort of went through. And then they wanted photo ID because they separate Indian citizens from international visitors, and the international visitors have a separate area to sit in. So as we finally got there, and it's like a stadium, if you can picture, you know, lots of big concrete seats. And on the Pakistan side, the women were on one side and the men were on another. And then on the Indian side, everyone was just mixed in together. And on the Indian side, there was a guy in a, you know, sort of parachute tracksuit pants who was like the crowd warmer. And his job was sort of to rev everyone up, and then suddenly there was Bollywood dancing and everyone's rushing down and getting into it. And we was, you know, and it was hot. Now, one thing I haven't talked about is the heat. In the south, it was very humid, maybe about 36 degrees. In the north, very, very dry, and it was up to, you know, 35 to 38 degrees. And you weren't allowed to have water, which, of course, was a bit tricky. But there's a lot of pomp and ceremony with the Indian guards sort of goose-stepping their way along, and same with the Pakistani side, chanting from one side of the border to the other. It was a carnival atmosphere. It was sort of quite odd.
Yeah, there's a lot of tension between those two countries.
Mm. Absolutely.
But they're able to come together ceremonially and put that aside and work together for the tourism in the area.
It is. And I just sort of wondered, you know, what hopes there were for maybe some sort of reconciliation and peace with an opportunity like that. And I know for a lot of people that would be a real struggle. But, you know, I tend to follow a lot of people who are non-violent, and I just wish that there was a better solution. But Jeffrey and Matthew, after I left in Amritsar and I went to New Delhi, they continued on through the Pakistan border to Lahore, and they'd had their visas arranged beforehand. They had an amazing time. I think we'll wait till they can come to Australia to tell their story.
Mm. In the Lahore part of Pakistan, fantastic. Your journeys then took a different twist.
They did. Well, one of the things that in Amritsar that was quite amazing was the food. And we were recommended by my friend here in Melbourne, who's from Amritsar, to go to a particular local restaurant for tandoori chicken. And I'll just tell this before we go to Delhi. We headed along in, you know, in a vehicle and pulled up outside, and, you know, people were cooking out on the street, and it was sort of an open-air cafe. And I was a bit reluctant because I thought, I don't know, it's not really the sort of place I want to go. But, you know, the guys encouraged me and we went in. Well, I was the only woman in the whole restaurant. There were just guys, all with tiny little bottles of whiskey that they were sort of topping into their Coke. Heading to Delhi, I flew from there.
Hang on. You didn't touch the whiskey, did you?
No.
Yes, right?
No, I didn't. What was really interesting about this place we went to, it was obviously, you know, where the local guys hung out. Everybody made an effort to make us welcome and got chairs for us. And one guy who was serving in the restaurant, it was hard to pick his age. You know, he'd obviously sort of had quite a hard life. But, you know, maybe he was 50, maybe he was 30, I don't know. But he spoke fluent, perfect English. And when we asked him, so where have you travelled? I thought he might have been in the Navy or something. He had lots of tattoos. He said, oh, nowhere. I've never been out of this area.
Wow.
Perfect English. So everyone was very, very welcoming. We had a lot of fun in Punjab. People were very, very friendly.
Did you discover why Sikhs wrap their hair up and the significance of that?
Well, certainly when we went to the Golden Temple, there were lots of interpretive information there that explained why, but I'm probably not an expert on it. So, but we'll post something on Facebook, a link to some really good information about Sikhism. Yeah. It's a very, very fascinating religion.
It is. And also, if they're not wearing a turban, they'll have a silver bracelet on that I think is given to them ceremoniously as well. It's absolutely fascinating, Faith. Mm. Fascinating. And you know, the turban colour doesn't really mean anything, I've discovered.
So predominantly Sikhism in that part of the world.
That's correct.
Did you gather there were people that weren't Sikhs?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there were Hindus and Jains and they were certainly the predominant ones. And then I headed on to New Delhi, and this was sort of the next chapter of the trip where I met an intrepid group. And this was my first ever group tour. Very, very fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I made some really fabulous friends, and I hope they're listening.
Now, Jodie, you didn't do an 18 to 25 tour, did you?
Yes, because I'm so youthful, nearly 40.
Last chance, Delhi dance.
What was the composition of the tour group you were part of?
Well, we met at a hotel that was on the itinerary. Interestingly, it was a real spectrum of age groups. So the youngest was probably maybe, you know, mid-20s, and the oldest maybe 70. There were a couple of people there in the group, older women travelling with their adult children, which was great. Most people there on their own, and a couple of people who knew each other, and a couple of couples, or one couple. So, you know, it was a really interesting dynamic, and I decided to just put my hand up to share a room with another woman. And our tour leader, who's a local from Rajasthan, Jitu, who's fantastic, mixed us up. So we got to share with different women in the group so that you got to know each other, and, you know, it was a nice way to sort of, you know, make friends with everybody.
Fantastic. And that group as well, how long did the tour go for?
The tour was for 14 days. So what we did was...
That's a long time to interact with a group of people.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, everybody would have had their apprehensions of, oh, gosh, I hope I like these people and, you know, I hope we all get along. But I think the way that the tour was structured suited us all as independent travellers as well. So, you know, if you wanted to participate, you can. But most people, you could be involved in everything. And if you didn't want to come and do something else, that was okay as well. So
I think people are a lot more relaxed when they're away as well. Like, they seem to leave all their dramas and things behind. We're hoping.
Yeah. Now, you're here on Detours with Lindsay and Greg, and our guest today is Jodie, who's travelling marvellous India. And we'll talk a bit more about the sights you saw on that tour after this break. And you're here on Detours with Lindsay and Greg and our guest, Jodie Wilmer, who's just returned from an amazing journey through India. Now, you're on this tour for 14 days with a group of people, Jodie. What sort of sights and experiences did you do with them?
Oh, well, some of the things that were real highlights were the types of transport that we used. Now, of course, you know, people
fantastic.
Know I'm a bit of a transport nut working at Travellers Aid. So we travelled on all modes. So it wasn't a private vehicle, and it wasn't just air conditioned. So we had a local bus. We even travelled on a school bus. We travelled on local trains. Now, the train from Delhi to Agra is where the Taj Mahal is. That's about a 3-hour drive, train trip. And that was really comfortable, you know, with the chai man coming down the seats to sell chai and, you know, bottles of water and samosas and all sorts of things at about 6:30 in the morning.
Fantastic.
Air conditioned, very comfortable. And then we travelled on a night train at the very end of our trip from Pushkar, which is where there's a major camel festival every year in November. And that night train was in a compartment with six berths. So I was up on the very top, so you had no hope of getting down to go to the toilet in the middle of the night. And then we travelled on jeeps and auto rickshaws, camels. Now, after the elephant experience, I didn't want to be on top of a camel, so I just went in the cart with Sanjeep and our guide, Jitu. So, yeah, that was nice.
Fantastic. I can see you strapped to the top of a bus with luggage and you up on top with 40 million people all travelling down a rickety road. No?
Well, that was interesting. As we were, you know, driving there are road rules, there are speed limits, but often people don't adhere to them. And that was quite an adjustment for a lot of people, especially if you're going on a major freeway and someone's driving the opposite direction, you know, coming towards you. And there's cows on the road and people, you know, they're holy cows, so people have to avoid them. But Rajasthan is a really beautiful area of India. It's quite arid. There's parts of it that are desert. But everywhere we went, even in really remote areas, then suddenly out of nowhere would come, you know, a woman in a beautiful sari with a herd of goats or, you know, kids playing just somewhere. Like, where do they live? Where do they come from?
And that's it, Jodie. Like, I'm sort of, you know, listening to this, like, you know, I would hate to be a child in Melbourne at the moment, you know, because, you know, like you have to live in an apartment block, you know, you're not allowed to have a backyard anymore. God forbid if you put a tree house up because the neighbour's going to take it to court or the council's going to come and burn your house down or something. And to hear about these kids that are able to run so free and really just enjoy being kids and enjoy their culture and all the rest of it, it must have been that part of it in itself a bit of a culture shock for you.
And part of that too is, do you get a sense that families still connect with their kids and they're not just running free, but there's a connection back to parents?
Oh, definitely. I mean, some of the places we visited were small rural villages, and they, you know, we went there not as sort of intruding on their privacy. We obviously had permission to be there. And, you know, the thing that was fascinating about a lot of the children is that they wanted their photo taken. And they were so excited and sort of a bit crazy about it. But as I sort of realised that, you know, often the kids, they don't have their own cameras and they don't get to see themselves in that way. So, and it was, you know, people were respectful and asking their permission to do that. But there were kids everywhere, you know. And, I mean, India has the largest youth population of the world at the moment, so
fantastic.
You know, there's a lot of population there.
Now you're up here on Detours with Lindsay and Greg interviewing Jodie, who's back from India, having a fabulous time in India. And part of India, perhaps, Jodie, we've already talked about the food, but I wonder if food's a staple that many Indians can afford. Perhaps there's two different markets, one for high-end people that have money, and we'll perhaps explore that, and one for low-end people. But here in Melbourne, on Cravings at 1 o'clock, we have Pete Dillon that's going to talk about food.
I tell you what, you the master. Are the queen of the segue. That's brilliant. I've been listening to you talk about India, and I'm incredibly jealous, and I want to go. So I'm thinking instead of Vietnam and China, my little eating tour, I'm going to move to India. Maybe not.
What's coming up, Pete?
We're talking Good Food and Wine Show, which is on next week in Melbourne. So Jamie Lang from Diversified Exhibitions is coming to tell us all about the Good Food and Wine Show. Hilary McNevin has been in Tassie for a couple of days at the Savour Tasmania Festival, so we'll talk to her. And a new restaurant called Union Dining has opened on Swan Street in Richmond. Adam Cash, who was formerly at Cutler & Co, and Nikki Reimer, who's very well known in Melbourne, have combined their talents, and Adam's here to talk about Union Dining.
All that and more. Cravings, Pete Dillon, 1 o'clock here on Joy after Detours. Now, Jodie, back on the trail in India, the food that people do eat is often different to that which we see in restaurants. Did you get a chance to go to a market in those towns?
We did. And we, particularly in Delhi, which is a hugely populated city and quite crazy, we spent a lot of time walking through the little markets in the back streets. And there were whole streets or alleyways just of sari shops and you know, little chai vendors and samosas and all sorts of street food. We went and tried a couple of things which were fantastic. I tried to avoid street food because I didn't want to get sick. However,
She got sick. Yeah. She got sick.
I have an interesting fact about Indian food that I just learnt this week, and it was just from sort of, you know, turning on TVs when perhaps I shouldn't have, and Dr. Oz was on. And it was actually a show about Alzheimer's. And one of the, of course, at the end of the show, you know, how do you prevent Alzheimer's, blah, 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 blah. And one of the things that he was advocating was to eat 2 curry meals a week, because in India they have the absolute lowest rate of Alzheimer's, and they found that by eating curry it actually stimulates the brain. And they did some research, and they took people and they did a memory test, then they gave them curry and, you know, probably nice, you know, little samosa or vindaloo or whatever, and they noticed that after eating the curry, after eating the Indian food specifically, that they actually remembered a lot more. So there you go, Jodie. And that's why you're looking so chipper. I think your brain's been awakened with all that curry.
It must be.
Well, what point did the with all that curry, what point did somehow
did
something
happen? Did you get sick?
You know, I was there for over 2.5 weeks before I had a tummy upset, and I went to the travel doctor before I went, and you know, I did the right thing.
So you planned for it?
I planned not to get sick, yeah. look, I think it's just a fact of life. Different hygiene, different environment, different water. And, you know, it was only for a couple of days, and I was fine. So,
do you think it was the food, or did you have
it's hard to say. I mean, some of the places we went had, you know, a lot of animals, although we weren't touching them. Who knows? But
airborne germs.
Yeah.
And you can live a sanitised environment while you travel, and you can lose so much of the experience of culture and different foods and different things to see and do, can't you?
Absolutely. And one of the things we did do relating to food, which was just fantastic, was a cooking class in Udaipur, which was just before we headed back towards Delhi in Rajasthan. And the gentleman who conducted the tour was the cooking class was like he described himself as a Jamie Oliver of India. And one of these English visitors had sort of announced that his was his new name. So what we did there was learnt some basic recipes and how to combine the spices and how to get those flavours happening. And even though I've been cooking Indian food for a little while, I learned a whole bunch of new things, and it was very exciting. So I really enjoyed it.
You know, it's not when Indian people cook curry, they're not just throwing in, you know, a teaspoon of keens or something like that. There's other complementary spices that go with that, which is absolutely fascinating.
Exactly. And, you know, the role of adding in oil at the right time and letting things, you know, develop those flavours and then adding in extra spices at the end. And it was great.
So you've brought back some of that expertise with you.
I have. I actually bought some spice boxes, which are sort of a round aluminium or steel tin, and in it has little small containers for spices. So I decided instead of bringing gifts back for everyone, I'll actually make some fabulous recipes and share them.
Oh, this is
nice.
If you want to join Jodie for a meal, Indian meal at her, you can SMS 0427JOY949. We'll get a team. We'll go around and take over a house.
Great way to pick up a date too, Jodie, I think.
One of the other great things was not only just the different modes of transport in Rajasthan was the different types of accommodation we stayed at. So we stayed at forts and palaces.
Great.
And we got to meet some of the descendants of Maharajas, and we stayed in one place which was, you know, dubbed by my roommate as the psychiatric asylum, which, you know, very, very budget place, which had windows right at the top of the ceiling and wasn't that glam. But most of the places we stayed were fantastic.
Because there's a lot of those old palaces that have been turned into hotels now, and these amazing people, you know, that that are descendants of, you know, princes from, you know, thousands of years ago were running them. And it's really quite quirky, and they're quite quirky people.
Yes, and a lot of these places are very, very remote and not necessarily on the tourist trail, so to speak. So, you know, in some of the places we stayed, we were the only guests. But mind you, you know, it was 46 degrees, so it's not the time of year that most people travel.
46 degrees, that's incredible.
Oh, heaven.
That's incredible. Now, to keep yourself spruced up and smelling beautiful, what do you do when you travel in 46-degree heat?
Oh, police.
Well,
seriously, what do you do? Do you get to shower three times a day? Or
No. I mean, you know, like in Australia, it's a very drought. A lot of drought in that region of India. So we were very mindful about how much water we were using. Look, the things we did to look after ourselves and keep ourselves nice were drinking lots of water, you know, litres of it a day, wearing long-sleeved cotton loose tops and pants so that you're being respectful towards the local culture, but also it's nice and cool and you don't get the sun on you, wearing a hat, using those towelette sort of wipe things to just sort of freshen up. And that's about all, really. That did the trick.
Wonderful.
And now, what would you do differently, and what is a must-see for people travelling to India?
Oh, a must-see would definitely be the Golden Temple in Amritsar. And what would I do differently? Probably not a lot. Just stay longer.
Yeah.
Go and see more. I loved it. Each part of my trip in India was amazing, and I made lovely, lovely friends, and I met really kind, great people. A local in Kerala took myself and Claire from the UK to a local Bollywood movie, or Mollywood, as they call it.
Bollywood.
Bollywood.
And everybody was really kind and helpful, and, you know, it was a great trip.
So, journey plans for you in the future, Jodie? Your next trip?
Well, I think I might spend some time in Australia, actually.
There's so much to see here,
there is, but, you know, eventually there's more to explore back in India.
Beautiful. Well,
today you've been on Detours with Lindsay and Greg, and our guest has been Jodie Wilmut, talking about some fabulous journeys through India. And we look forward to sharing future journeys with you over the next couple of weeks and into the new year. But next week is Radiothon, Jodie, so it's very important that everyone that's been part of Detours over the last few years signs up and joins up. And if you're out there, tune in next week for the Radiothon Detours show.
Absolutely. And there's only 100 tickets left for the Joy 94.9 Radiothon launch party at Red Benny's on Friday, June the 3rd. This just sounds fantastic. It's featuring an amazing lineup of all your favourites with live performances from Dolly Diamond, Jade Leonard, Trinity Shirley Davis, Supergirlie, Paris Wells and Zoe Badwe, plus international superstar Gina G will be launching her brand new single on the night as well. The I Heart Joy Radiothon launch party at Red Benny's in South Yarra, Friday, June the 3rd from 6:30 p.m. Tickets are only $10 and selling fast, so don't miss out. Book now by calling 1300-JOY-949. That's 1300-569-949. And you better be there and support Joy because it's bloody fabulous.
See you next week.
See you later.
Bye now.
The most diverse sound for the most diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.